Kia ora, welcome to the winter season of Outspoken, a current affairs program in which we take an in-depth look at the stories behind the headlines. I'm Patrick O'Mara, and this week we'll debate this country's future in manufacturing and the challenges it faces. Is it in crisis, as some claim, or is the sector's declining importance a natural consequence of changes occurring in the economy? Well, joining me are the Manufacturers and Exporters Association's Chief Executive, John Walley, EROAD Founder and Chief Executive, Stephen Newman, and New Zealand Initiative's Executive Director, Oliver Hartwich. Well, before we begin, here's Cameron Moore, the chair of an inquiry into manufacturing commissioned by the opposition political parties last month.
Without doubt, our macroeconomic settings have increased risk, reduced profitability of our manufacturers, inhibited high-value exports, and have stalled investment and quality job creation. For many manufacturers, we are reaching a tipping point where irretrievable harm will occur if we do not act swiftly.
Well, it's very dramatic stuff. And John Walley, if I could start with you. Mr. Moore's talking about the high New Zealand dollar and its impact on firms in jobs. But really, is it as dramatic as he was making out?
Well, it is for some, for others not so, for others not at all. And so you look at the general characteristics of those companies which are really suffering and have suffered over the past 10 years or so. And it's those companies that have huge, significant weight of exports offshore, 90-95% of revenue, and who are very exposed to the currency fluctuations that we see here in New Zealand.
We did have a Reserve Bank speech out earlier this year where Graham Wheeler, the governor, pointed out that manufacturing exports were above pre-recession levels and were increasing at an annual rate of more than 2% since 2008. And if you exclude food processing, it's just over 1.1%. So it may be tough, but it seems the manufacturing sector is surviving.
Oh, there certainly are people surviving. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I'd sort of take odds with the numbers. It rather depends what you look at. If you look at the high technology exports, they've actually contracted since the early 2000s, lower today than they were in 2001. Simple manufacturers have contracted even further. If you look at the general stats around New Zealand, the sort of high tech exports represent probably half typically from a developed economy that you'd see elsewhere around the world.
You're saying what, it's the New Zealand dollar which is the main factor behind the problem?
It's the fact if you are highly exposed to exchange rates, i.e. you export 90% plus of your manufacture, the impact of the currency is more significant than almost any other change in the macro environment.
Does that matter, though, that most of our exports manufactured exports go to Australia, an increasing number now going to Asia as well? That exchange rate, the cross rate between Australia and New Zealand, has actually been quite favourable.
Typically, high-tech exports are priced in US dollars, regardless of their endpoint, and a lot of the exports to Australia tend to be intermediate goods that are then re-exported, and so the Australians have been suffering on the East Coast in just the same way in terms of its currency with regard to the US. So the high-tech sector is the one that's suffering.
Are we seeing the same sort of job losses or firms shuttering their doors as we did, say, this time last year, where we did seem to have a number of firms closing, manufacturing firms closing?
I think that the closure rates come and go. It's a bit of a revolving door. Sometimes it appears to be much worse than others, but the underlying issue, the one that I see on a daily basis, is that manufacturers who are heavily weighted to exports aren't really investing in R&D, new equipment, and that speaks quite ill for the future.
And you're saying there's a direct link between that and the New Zealand dollar. What, it makes these firms less profitable?
Well, if you don't anticipate a return, you're not really going to start investing today, and it's that investment impact that I've seen grow over the past 4 or 5 years.
Oliver Hartwich, if I can bring you in here, I mean, the Reserve Bank and their Finance Minister, Bill English, they've said the dollar is overvalued. It is hurting. Surely manufacturers have a point here.
Well, I can certainly understand that the high dollar is hurting exporters. Of course it does. whether the dollar is overvalued or not, that is a subjective assessment. It is really hard to find an objective measure of currency evaluation. In any case, even if it was overvalued and even if there was a common agreement on that, it doesn't quite follow naturally what should be done about it. Because there is very little that a reserve bank in a country the size of New Zealand could really do to really work against the flow and work against all sorts of other factors in the world economy. The Reserve Bank may well feel that the dollar is overvalued, and yet we would not really have the tools to really fiddle around with the exchange rate to make it fit our desires.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the case, though, for other nations. We have Singapore, we have Switzerland, we have Brazil. They have all taken efforts, rather strenuous efforts, to try and keep their dollar at what they consider to be a competitive level for exporters.
Well, if you look at Switzerland, I mean, Switzerland is a very good example. Switzerland is surrounded by countries part of the Eurozone. The Eurozone has massive problems, and Switzerland is seen as a safe haven. That's why money is flowing into Switzerland, and the Swiss National Bank has tried everything it could to stabilize the exchange rate, but in doing so, they have taken massive risks. It's a big gamble for Switzerland, and it will take years to find out whether that actually paid off for the Swiss. I don't know whether Switzerland is really a model we should follow here.
But it does go to show you can do things. You can try and find ways to influence your exchange rates. Not just that, obviously, capital controls are another way, which other nations have used in the past.
Sure, but none of these remedies comes without risks. It is very difficult. It is dangerous. You just have to see how many risks now lie in the balance sheet of the Swiss National Bank. Yes, you can take action, but I'm only saying that long term you have to be really, really careful, because it might just come down to hurt you a few years down the track.
I suppose the other side of that, though, is that what happens if your manufacturing sector is fatally damaged by the, and not just the obviously the high New Zealand dollar, but what we've seen obviously too is the volatility, particularly since 2008.
Sure, that's true. But I think, again, it's a good idea to just go a step back and ask whether we really have this big manufacturing crisis that everybody's talking about. It depends on the measures you're looking at. For example, we already heard Graham Wheeler talking about a rising volume of exports in manufacturing, and he certainly has a point. On the other hand, our manufacturing employment is about 40,000 jobs below what it was in 2008. But a lot of this job loss is really just down to the GFC that happened in 2008, and afterwards manufacturing employment has basically stabilized for the last few years. So you could even argue that what we are seeing and what we are complaining about is a cyclical effect, but long term the prospects for manufacturing do not actually look too bad.
The jobs that are lost, you know, if I was talking to some of the unions that have been involved in that, we find out that those jobs don't necessarily come back. They're not the ones that people do get in replacement, don't tend to be high paying, and they tend to be less secure. Surely, if you want jobs for people, you want good jobs which are highly productive, and doesn't manufacturing offer you that?
These are exactly the jobs that you would want to see. You would want to see highly productive jobs, jobs that are secure for the future, jobs that create export opportunities in the future. But again, is it really a policy to drive and to create these jobs if we are starting to fiddle around with the exchange rate? Or shouldn't we just try to put a framework in place for economic development in which these jobs would be created?
Stephen Newman, can I bring you in here? Stephen, now EROAD itself, I'm sure for a lot of people they might be wondering, as a manufacturing company, what it is that you do. So can I ask you just briefly to explain what it is and what you're trying to do?
So EROAD is quite a new company in terms of what it offers. In New Zealand, we have modernised the road user charging system. It used to be a manual paper-based system, and we have modernised that by creating an electronic option. A component of that is hardware that we manufacture, but there is a lot of SaaS-based services and financial transaction engine sitting on the back of that. So we provide a blended service of stuff that you access via the internet to buy your road user charges, a distance recorder that counts down your distance against that license, and then automatically the financial backend goes off and buys another road user charge license when that expires. So in terms of the manufacturing side of it, it is important that we are manufacturing the right things in the right places, and for us, New Zealand is absolutely the right place. And I suppose my background from a manufacturing perspective is as one of the founders of Navman, we had extensive manufacturing operations across the four divisions that we operated: marine electronics, car navigation, fleet tracking, and precision GPS. Some of those products were right-sized to make in New Zealand, so many of our marine electronic products, which were high mix, high value, low volume, that was good to do in New Zealand. Car navigation, we just ended up running out of people that could do the manufacturing for us in New Zealand, as our volumes went from, you know, 20,000 up to several million, and with the New Zealand dollar content of those products and the changing exchange rate that has always been part of the New Zealand landscape, it was too high risk to do that manufacturing in New Zealand, so that got moved to China. Our GPS modules, they were manufactured in Wellington and, in Christchurch. And that was very good for us to do that. They were predominantly surface mount robots that did the placement of those. So there was a high level of US dollar raw materials and a very low manufacturing content. So for us to have high quality and to control the manufacturing and the IP, it was good to do in New Zealand.
It does sound, though, Stephen, just to interrupt there, what you're saying is that, are you arguing that the manufacturing at some stage is best placed offshore?
It depends what you're doing. So for what we're doing with E-Road, it makes perfect sense to do it in New Zealand. So the volume of our production will be in the tens to hundreds of thousands. Our bigger problem is installing them on the trucks around the world. It's a product that's used as part of a secure financial service. So there's a lot of IP that we don't want to go missing. And the New Zealand dollar component of the manufacturing is reasonably low. So a lot of our parts that we buy are in US dollars, we're selling in US dollars. So we're reasonably well naturally hedged. When we take into account the cost of moving it to, say, Asia, managing the communication, the security risk, it makes sense for us to keep it in New Zealand. So from my point of view, manufacturing is about doing the right things in the right places.
Does that then mitigate, do you think, against the government doing more to help the manufacturing sector, if in fact and partly it is going to be inevitable that manufacturing jobs are going to go overseas because of that low-cost component or commoditisation that you eventually get?
I think it is inevitable, and I think if you look at places like Japan, Singapore, and you look at what products they do actually manufacture, the low-value, high-volume type of manufacturing will follow that kind of low-cost labour around the world. And, you know, New Zealand isn't a low-cost labour place, so there are good high-tech products that we should be making in New Zealand, and there's some that should be made in other countries, and that's kind of inevitable.
So this is this a case for we should be making products where we are price makers, not price takers?
I think that's not relevant. I think it comes down to the New Zealand dollar content, the sensitivity to a company's profitability, and those type of things.
Well, John, then, just on that basis, I mean, is it going to be inevitable then that those industries, and I guess particularly ones like textiles, footwear, those simple manufacturing jobs will eventually be lost because you're not going to be able to compete with low-cost countries overseas?
Yeah, I'd sort of pick up a few things of what's been said. I think the reality is that the environment in New Zealand is what the environment is. People like Stephen and others respond to that environment. If the environment here is treats manufacturing as an optional extra, doesn't do what other economies does to support its manufacturing base, then clearly more things will move than would otherwise be the case. And so the solution is what the solution is. I know of one company that sells software as a service that is 90-something percent US sales, based in New Zealand, today has to sell something like 1.8 times the unit volume that it sold 10 years ago to make the same number in New Zealand dollars. That's a pushback which is a significant problem for anybody to get over. And I guess software is the wonderful product, which it doesn't cost anything to ship. The unit volume can be anything you like it to be. That company seriously considering relocating. Other companies, which are more traditional manufacturing, are seriously considering relocation because of the way things are in New Zealand. In the end, that means we lose the potential for the future. We lose the capacity, we lose the capability.
So at the moment you're saying we have firms which are seriously considering that. Even with the dollar coming down now, what, roughly around 8 cents in the last month and a half?
I mean, the number I just gave you about double the unit sales for that company, the past 6 weeks have changed from 2 times to 1.8 times. So things are better, but 10% better, not much more.
The government have argued, yes, we've heard a lot of these ideas before. Yes, we've heard a lot of the possible solutions, but really they're old, they're tired, and the government is actually doing things. It's put in place R&D grants. It has the Callaghan Innovation Institute. It has New Zealand Trade and Enterprise Assistance. Surely these are the things where the government can do to help firms try and keep control over the things they can control. The exchange rate is just one of those that the government says they can't.
Clearly, and the exchange rate is the outturn of a number of other things. There are options around fiscal policy, there's options in monetary policy that could stabilise the external economy from an exporter's perspective, but these things tend to be politically too difficult to address, and so we do the window dressing. Grants are helpful for some, but not for most. Trade and enterprise are helpful for some, but not for most.
What about the Callaghan Institute? Surely a lot of investment is going in that area.
It's better for firms to invest in their own development, to commit to their own future, because they see a return on that investment, rather than chase around for some support or other from one government agency or another. Callaghan will always struggle because the sector it faces is very diverse. It may or may not have the capability to assist someone coming from a high-tech manufacturing perspective. Certainly the industrial sector is significantly more diverse than, say, facing one of the agricultural CRIs.
Oliver, I mean, John does raise an interesting point there, and I guess we've seen it in manufacturing as well. Obviously, we are reliant on dairy. And if we look at manufacturing, the real growth area has been that food processing area. Aren't we running the risk of having an economy, an export economy, which is very much focused on one particular area rather than the wide diversity that we have talked about for many, many decades?
Well, undoubtedly, agriculture is one of these areas in which New Zealand has a comparative advantage. And in today's economy, in today's global economy, it's probably not the worst area to be invested in, because we can see that there is a lot of demand coming from Asian countries. I think currently, if Indonesia just increases milk consumption by a little bit, that would probably soak up twice the amount that we put out every year. So there's a lot of untapped potential in this industry. So it's probably not the worst industry to be in. On the other hand, of course, you're right, it would be nice to have some greater diversity in the sector. But to return to Stephen's point, I think it is absolutely crucial to get this right. There are some industries that will never locate in New Zealand. We are not going to see the next General Motors in New Zealand because there's
simply I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that.
Yeah. And in a similar fashion, I think it is quite unlikely to see some industries where cost of labour is crucial to relocate to New Zealand, because we're quite an expensive country. So it's quite clear that New Zealand only has a chance as a manufacturing country if it chooses its niches quite carefully. And if you look at the examples of the world's best export nations, that's exactly what they have done. I personally, of course, as you can hear from my accent, I come from a big manufacturing country in Europe, from Germany. But even in Germany, you can see that sectoral change, whereas 40, 50 years ago, there was still a textiles industry in Germany. It's completely gone now. First, it was relocated to Eastern European countries. Now it's in Asia. Sectoral change will always happen. You have to be very clear about which industry you're good in. And I think agriculture is certainly one of these industries where New Zealand has that comparative advantage. We have to find out the other industries in which we can make a great difference.
Should we not then worry about that, the share of manufacturing to total GDP falling? And it has been, what, down from 25% to roughly around 12 to 13%. We shouldn't worry if its contribution keeps falling?
It depends. I think there was a fashion about 10 years ago where people talked about an economy that is a postmodern economy where there's no more manufacturing happening. And that these were fashionable ideas at the time, particularly in Britain, where I worked back then. And I still remember these ideas about the postmodern economy, and they were looking at the old dinosaurs of Europe, particularly Germany, and they said, well, didn't we leave that stage behind? Then the GFC came, and they suddenly found that you can't live on financial services alone. So I think there is great value in having a good manufacturing sector. But again, to return to the point, you have to really decide quite carefully what you're good at, and just having manufacturing for manufacturing's sake is not a good policy.
Stephen, just from your point of view, do you receive government help in any way through for EROAD?
We've received a little bit of help from NZTE with exploring markets offshore, but that has been it to date.
What about some of the other things that the government does around R&D grants or the Callaghan Innovation? Are these type of things useful for a firm such as yourself?
I think it potentially is. I think Callaghan is definitely a good initiative. For us, we have created a global opportunity, and as we deliver against that, we show our potential competitors of the future where the money is. So our biggest risk is not going fast enough, because somebody else will fill that vacuum. So to the extent that an R&D grant can help us look further out, take on a bit more risk as we develop our technology, I think it's a very smart thing to be done.
For manufacturers that you talk to, what do you say to them?
There's, within Auckland, there are quite a few technology companies that are sort of part of the Navman legacy. And really, it does come down to doing, if you're going to be globally competitive, you've got to do the right things in the right places, which really comes down to the specific product categories that you're in. Most of those companies have their manufacturing, their R&D centres in Auckland, and they are growing, but their manufacturing is done predominantly in Asia.
And for you, John, the government does have this goal of getting exports to 40% of GDP by 2025. Do you feel that manufacturing will make its contribution to that?
40% of GDP is 6% less than Switzerland and 10% more than Germany and 10% more than the UK. This would make New Zealand an outlier in terms of its percentage of GDP earned from the external economy. And if we look at the Dutch disease that New Zealand suffers from, farming, dairy farming, which is probably the most lucrative land use in New Zealand, is turning into a property speculation game. $6 million worth of assets driving $1 million worth of revenue, creating two or three jobs per farm on 400 cows. It's a difficult sector to build a future on.
Oliver?
Well, if I may, I would like just to get back to the question whether you can combine a strong manufacturing sector with a strong exchange rate. And I think, again, looking at the example of some of the world's greatest exporters, you can see that you can, in fact, do that. If you look at the European example, it was Germany for a long period of post-war history that followed the policy of a strong national currency, against which most other European countries regularly devalued. And yet, at the end of that process, Germany was the biggest exporter in Europe. And how they did that was to really focus on the areas of the economy where they can be most productive and where they could really add a lot of value. So in the end, you would have thought with the very strong currency, the Deutschmark in the 1960s to 1990s before the introduction of the euro, that German exporters and manufacturers would have suffered massively because the Italians would have constantly been able to, for example, undercut German manufacturers. But in fact, it was quite the opposite that happened. The high Deutschmark certainly hurt exporters, but it also drove them towards higher and higher value-added products in the end. So it actually increased the productivity of the German economy over long periods of time. So I think that example is quite instructive because it shows us that a high exchange rate and a strong dollar do not necessarily have to be a complete disaster for the economy if you react to them wisely.
I think I'd agree with that, but we should remember that there were many and significant macroeconomic interventions by German government through that period, supporting investment in new machine tools, supporting investment in R&D. It's one thing to run a strong exchange rate policy across an economy in terms of the main sector that you're seeking to run that economy with. In New Zealand, we operate in such a way that we support land and buildings, but we don't support productive activity. There is no macroeconomic intervention that's meaningful in that productive activity.
Oliver, I suppose it has been an issue, hasn't it? Particularly around property speculation, that in fact that we consider that a lot of the government's measures do seem to favour those areas rather than the productive sector.
Yeah, but still the question remains, what is the alternative to all of that? If you really believe that you have to do something about the exchange rate, does it mean that we're then giving up, for example, on the price stability target that the Reserve Bank currently follows? I would actually like to find out what happens then if we really start to target the exchange rate and what kind of inflation rates we are going to see then in such a scenario. I think it wouldn't really help the economy in the long run. It would probably lead to all sorts of distortions in the economy, particularly in land and property prices.
But we can't get away from the fact that the real economy is essentially been static since 2005. That the growth is all around the sort of non-traded economy in New Zealand.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to the Manufacturers and Exporters Association's Chief Executive John Wally, EROAD Founder and Chief Executive Stephen Newman, and New Zealand Initiative's Executive Director Oliver Hartwich. I'm Patrick O'Mara, and that's Outspoken.